Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we get some great information from the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and we find out what it was like to fly in a B-17 in World War II. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Military kids play an important role in the life of a military family. They give our service members encouragement, love, and hope for the future. They're a special group of kids, and in times of separation from their military parent, they have a unique set of challenges. We've learned over the years that one of the best ways to nurture and empower military kids is by connecting them with other military family members. They might be the only one in their school with a parent in the military, but there are others going through the same things across the state. This summer, I encourage all military families to get their children connected through camps. I am proud of the Minnesota National Guard Youth and Teen Camp that will be held at Camp Ripley for two separate weeks this summer, the last week of July and the first week of August. The camp allows Guard children ages 10 to 15 to experience things like canoeing, archery, hiking, and a confidence course. The goal of the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp is to provide a fun, safe, and caring environment where kids can enjoy outdoor activities while learning about patriotism, freedom, in our country. Campers get a chance to connect and talk with their peers about how deployments affect them and their families. Meanwhile, all staff members are volunteers and are also a part of our National Guard family. Throughout the summer, there are several Minnesota-based camps for children of all branches of service. Our team at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon keeps a watchful eye out for the camps offered specifically for military kids and posts that information on their website. I encourage you to visit BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org. Pick out a camp that will work for your family and get your children registered.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Mark Brown, Commander, Department of Minnesota, Military Order of the Purple Heart. Mark, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
A little quieter here today than it was last December when we had
six of us,
of the Commander's Task Force.
Yeah.
But that's all right. Today we're going to focus on the Military Order of the Purple Heart. But first, you were in the military.
Yes, sir.
My generation.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us about it?
I went in the United States Army in 1968. I was born and raised in Chicago. And I went from Germany to Vietnam in 69 to 71. I was with the Black Horse, the 11th Air Cav, and I was a door gunner.
And you made it through.
Yes, sir.
Well, welcome back after all those years. And I don't know where those years went, do you?
But the days, months fly by now.
They do. And now I understand you're in your second term as chapter commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart.
Actually, that's incorrect. I had two terms as a chapter commander, which I completed. And now I am the state commander for the Military Order of Purple Heart.
The Department of Minnesota State Commander.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what is that veteran service organization all about?
Well, I'll be glad to tell you about that. Our veterans organization, the Military Order of Purple Heart, is the oldest and smallest veterans organization in the United States. We have approximately 47,000 life members. And obviously there's a lot more, but they haven't been tapped or they haven't come forward, or we'd like to help them. We have a national service office program, and that's through our foundation. And their employees, they're national service officers, and they do claims and appeals. And we have two fine gentlemen here in Minneapolis, Derek Firewall and Dave Schrock. And they do a wonderful job on claims, and they really do the process. They represent me as a power of attorney. And my other title also is a department service officer, so I try to get on this radio show is great. Is to get any veteran out there that hasn't been enrolled, which there's thousands that haven't in Minnesota, to get into the VA to get help.
And there's a lot of them that don't think they deserve it, but if they served, and they survived and they came back, they've earned it, haven't they?
Yeah, according to the commissioner, there's 358,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. 15% are enrolled in the VA.
There's a whole pile of them that haven't.
Yeah.
Mark, I want to get back to the military, the Purple Heart. I understand that's the military's oldest decoration.
Yes, it is.
Goes back to, as I understand, August 7th, 1782, from General Washington.
Yeah, originally it was the merit badge. And then over the years, the merit badge disappeared. And then MacArthur got involved many years later, and he ordered one of his officers to redesign that medal, and it became the Purple Heart. And on the back of that Purple Heart, it has my name on it, and it's got the merit badge still on there.
From the original.
Uh-huh, that's correct.
And for those civilians out there that maybe have never been in the military, who's eligible to receive a Purple Heart?
The only one that's eligible for the Purple Heart medal itself is you have to actually draw blood in a combat zone, be wounded, or unfortunately killed in a line of fire in a combat zone.
So you really earn that the hard way, don't you?
Yes, sir.
I'm happy that I haven't earned that one, Mark.
That's what I heard.
I salute you for having earned it.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you came back from Vietnam. Tell us a little more about the Military Order of Purple Hearts. I understand that that you're out there helping all veterans.
Yeah, just to get the word out to all the veterans in the state of Minnesota, you don't have to be a Purple Heart recipient to go see a national service officer or come and visit me at the VA as a department service officer. I will help you get enrolled. A lot of the veterans think that you did have to be a Purple Heart recipient to come to that office. That's not true. We'll help anybody.
So for all of our veterans, if they've got any concerns about their service and their health and what have you, they should start with their county veteran service officer.
Exactly.
And they have all kinds of resources and understand what's available and who's available. And for those that might be service disabled in some way, then they can start them down that process.
Yeah, there's the 86 county veteran service officers throughout the state of Minnesota. I know a lot of them. And eventually they'll contact me to say so-and-so veteran's coming in and he's going to need some help through the paperwork and the guidance to the VA because it's such a huge building. And I do my very best to help them out.
We're speaking with Mark Brown, the commander, department commander of the Military Order of the Purple Hearts on Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, what other type of things does the Military Order of Purple Heart do to help our veterans and our citizens?
Well, here locally, we have several things. One thing I like to mention to our public, we have a first responders. This is a national award for police officers, firemen, paramedics, wounded, injured or killed in the line of duty in our community. They don't receive the medal. They receive a certificate plaque for gratitude. If the officer was killed in the line of duty, then we issue that plaque and a ceremony to the family, which we have several coming up between now and May for our convention. That is one thing. Our first responder officer here in Minnesota is retired Burnsville police officer, Wally Lynn, and he's the first responder coordinator in Minnesota, and he's done a wonderful job. The other things that we do is we do fundraising through our all our chapters. Now we have 13 chapters in Minnesota, so the two new chapters, I'm sure they'll be getting busy, but we raise funds through the public on a purple flower, and 100% of those funds that are raised, we donate them right back to the veteran. Example, to the VA, to a nursing home, to outreach programs, anything that can help a veteran, 100% of that money goes back to the veteran.
So outreach programs is a big part of what you do.
Yeah, outreach is very important. With my two national service officers and myself, we do stand-downs. Stand-downs are really big. The first one coming up will be in it'll be in June at the Boy Scout camp by the federal building, by the VA, and they have them in St. Cloud. They have them in Bemidji. They have them in Rochester. And these are for veterans out there that don't have any resources or help. They have at the outreaches and the stand downs. What they have is they'll have social service people there. They'll have people like myself, a national service office. They'll have attorneys there. They'll have doctors there. They'll have legal aid there. And they'll even get a haircut there and a bath.
So give our homeless veterans a hand up and try to help them get back.
And that program really is put on by MACV, and that really helps the homeless veteran. It really does.
Mark, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little more about the stand downs, and we want to talk about the Commander's Task Force.
Okay.
We're speaking with Mark Brown, Department Commander of Military of the Purple Heart on Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Fellow veterans and supporters, this is Lee Alfords, Department Commander of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, inviting you to join us for a ride for healing starting next Memorial Day. The week-long ride kicks off May 27th in St. Paul, covers the four corners of the state, and is capped off by a June 1st rally weekend in the Brainerd Lakes area. Proceeds will support the National Vietnam Veterans Memorial Education Center. For more information, visit rideforhealing.com. That's rideforhealing.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined today by Mark Brown, the Department Commander, State of Minnesota, for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Mark, when we went to break, we were talking about the stand-downs and MACV, and you mentioned something about the other veteran service organizations. There's nine of them authorized in the state of Minnesota, and you all get together under the, it's called the Commander's Task Force.
That's correct.
Now, do all of those organizations participate in the stand-downs with MACV, who puts it on? Can you tell me how that all works?
The majority of them do. They really do. And a lot of the veterans organizations are stretched really thin as far as staffing, because I've seen all the organizations out there. Vietnam veterans will have a table out there, too. Now, you want me to explain how it works?
What does it mean to a homeless veteran? What are they going to see that day? What's going to happen to them?
First of all, it is broadcast. There's flyers put out throughout the whole area. And it'll tell a veteran that it's homeless that there's going to be food provided for you. There's going to be clothing. There'll be showering. There'll be assistance by nurses, doctors, lawyers, social workers, social security people. Everybody's going to be out there to help that veteran, especially the homeless veteran.
Now, there's a number of these around the state every year, but the one out at the Boy Scout camp at Fort Snelling is pretty well attended, isn't it?
That's the big one. That's a two-day event, and they average about 7,000.
7,000 homeless vets come through there.
Not saying they're all homeless, but there's a lot of them. It's 7,000 in 2 days veterans come through.
So they get an opportunity to talk to the VA. They get an opportunity to talk to lawyers.
The VA
clean up
has
whatever they need.
The VA, they can do a claim right there, file a claim right on the spot.
So if anybody ever asks what the Commander's Task Force does and what the veteran service organizations do, that's, if you don't do anything else, you're helping a lot of people that need some help.
Oh, absolutely.
That's terrific. Now, the other thing, the Commander's Task Force, we've been talking the last few weeks about veterans on the Hill. And the legislation that the Commander's Task Force and all of you commanders from the nine veteran service organizations have kind of agreed on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you're pushing is to try to finish up the work over at the VA hospital, isn't it?
That's correct. Well, number one is, if I may, there's all kinds of phases at the VA hospital. The one phase that's going to be taking place, believe it or not, and it's not a joke, April 1st, the new construction of the parking is going to start April 1st. And that's going to be right in front of the outpatient's entrance. And that's going to affect 244 parking spots just to start the construction. And it'll be completed in 19 months.
19 months.
Mm-hmm.
What are those outpatients going to do, Mark?
Well, they got to get there early. They put out the word for the employees to relocate, to take public transportation. There's plenty of parking over by the Fort Snelling building. There's parking right over there. It's going to be interesting.
I'll hope to get that done pretty soon. And, of course, there's some other legislation that the veteran service organizations are promoting to help veterans as well.
Mm-hmm. The biggest issues that are coming up right now, we're looking for more money for another phase for another vet's home. Over where it's located right now in Minneapolis. Building 19 is open up now. It's a beautiful facility. And now we're looking for more private money for another building for the future.
The area we used to call the old veterans home.
It used to be called the old soldiers home.
The old soldiers home.
Exactly.
You bet. But that's kind of the last phase that kind of ties everything together, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. You get one built and you got to get the money and the federal money together and the state money together. And then you build another building.
Collectively, the Commander's Task Force represents a lot of veterans around Minnesota, the VFW, American Legion, Purple Hearts.
We all work together. We sit down at the CTF once a month with the commissioner. I like to call, I always call him the general because I respect his rank, but Larry's a great guy. He's been a great service to our veterans here in Minnesota. He'll come up with these ideas, and he'll sit in that room very quietly, and he, like yesterday, and there was a couple things that were brought up, and he says, I'll get back to you on that. He protects us. He doesn't want to stick our, he doesn't want to watch us stick our neck out too far. But it's really great. We vote on things as a commander's task force, and we've asked, he comes up for if we can put in for a grant request for certain needs, like a nursing home, like transportation. A year and a half ago, the Military Order of Purple Heart put in a grant request for B for V, Vets for Vets, and our foundation, mine, the Military Order of Purple Heart, matched it. And the Fergus Falls VA Hospital has a brand-new shuttle bus van, courtesy of the Military Order of Purple Heart.
And we see that out at the VA hospital every once in a while, don't
we? The one, that one there is getting old. We got a brand-new one, pretty much, 3 years old, out at St. Cloud. We donated that also. That's where that money comes from.
So it helps all our outstate veterans get down to the Minneapolis VA hospital mm-hmm. when they need to.
Exactly.
When they might not otherwise be able to get here.
Yeah. I got to give a big plug to the DAV with their transportation here in Minnesota. They just haul in thousands every year for free transportation. They do a remarkable job.
We're speaking with Mark Brown, the Department Commander of the Military Order of Purple Heart on the Minnesota Military Radio. Mark, back to the Military Order of the Purple Heart and the award, the Purple Heart. I know there's an awards chart, and I know this is a touchy topic for you, but the Purple Heart is a special award. It represents people who are wounded in combat. But there's a new award out that they're talking about, isn't there?
Yeah, the award is, it's kind of like a merit award for the drone operators. And all the veterans organizations are pretty upset about the placing of this award on the chart or on the veteran or the military person where they would be actually positioning that ribbon or medal on their uniform on the wall. It's the drone operators do a wonderful job. They're technicians. They're pretty much out of harm's way. They want the DOD, Department of Defense, wants to put that drone medal ahead of the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart. And it's ridiculous. That is just absurd.
So here in Minnesota, you've discussed it at the Commander's Task Force?
Oh, yeah.
And is everybody on the same page?
Oh, absolutely.
Which is, if they want to approve that medal, that's fine, but let's find another place to put it on the chart.
Exactly. No, we'll have the medal. We have no problem having that medal. You know, that's the great thing about it. But that medal does not deserve to be moved up by the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart.
A little different than being in a combat zone and being shot at.
Exactly.
So you're working on that as well.
Yeah.
Mark, I know you've been involved in the Military Order of the Purple Heart for a long time. We just got a couple of minutes left, and your tour of duty as the department commander is coming up in a couple of months, isn't it?
That's correct, May 20th.
How do you feel about the work you've done and about the people that are coming up behind you to take care of business going forward?
Well, I don't take a lot of credit for what the work I have done, but I'm really proud of what I've done. I really have. I'm really proud of my organization, the Department of the Military Order of Purple Heart. We are in great shape. We got good leadership coming up. And I wish them nothing but the best. I'll work with them as much as I can. It's going to be it'll be good.
The membership in the Purple Heart is free.
Yes, if you are a Purple Heart recipient awarded the Purple Heart, and if you don't belong to our organization, I believe there is a contact that you can get a hold of one of our office numbers. Do they have that number here?
We'll have a link to your website on our Facebook page, Minnesota Military Radio.
And it's a free life membership that we're going to offer all Purple Heart recipients.
So it's real simple to sign up?
Very simple. The only requirement is you discharge a DD-214 or DD-215 amendment with the Purple Heart on it. You mail it in, we'll take care of the application, and in 30 days you'll get the certificate from the National Welcome into the organization.
And join one of those chapters, and you can help veterans helping veterans.
Yeah, all these chapters. Now we have, I created two, started up two chapters in a little over 2 months, and it was hard work, but I enjoyed it. And I'd like to do a plug and a hats off to Rusty Ort up in Moorhead, Minnesota, the new IROC commander of that chapter, And then David Myers, the new commander of the Rochester chapter now, too. Those are going to be very, very strong chapters. The other chapters are really strong, too, but these are the new ones, and it won't take them long to get up and running. They're doing really well.
Mark, I know at the Military Order of the Purple Hearts, you have a creed that you live by. You want to share that with us?
Well, I don't know if I came up with it, but I heard this before, but since we are Purple Heart recipients, don't forget we have that extra heart to help out another veteran. Is that the one you're talking about, Tom?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm proud of that. And, yeah, we do have that extra heart.
Mark, we got about 30 seconds left. You've been doing a great job. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, if you know a veteran, and if you are a veteran, and you know a veteran out there that's in need, get him into a VA, get him into a county veteran service officer, and get him help as soon as possible.
Plenty of help available. All they have to do is ask.
Yes, they do.
Mark, I want to thank you for joining us again on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much.
This is Mark Brown, the Department Commander of the Military Order of Purple Heart on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us, and we'll find out what it was like to fly a B-17 in World War II. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back.
Friends, this is Don Pancake, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. As we continue our mission to train school patrols across the state, we encourage you to make a difference. Please visit legionville.org. That's legionville.org.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll find out what it was like to fly in a B-17 in World War II. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
I want to share with you about something that is close to my heart. As many of you know, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund is a nonprofit organization that built the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Wall. After building the wall, the Veterans Memorial Fund continued its mission to honor, educate, and heal by building an education center at the wall. The center will be the place on the National Mall where stories and sacrifices of our heroes will never be forgotten. Faces Never Forgotten is their current campaign, which is a national call for photos to put a face and a story to each name on the wall. Out of the 1,074 fallen military personnel from Minnesota, there are still over 500 pictures to collect. I would like to recognize Diane Fenneman, a volunteer who has committed her time to the Call for Photos program here in Minnesota. Professionally, as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and personally as a Vietnam veteran, I encourage you to join in this initiative by submitting your missing heroes' photos and bringing our veterans all the way home. To find out more, visit vvmf.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is a flight navigator from World War II on a B-17, and his name is Bob Clemens, and he's originally from White Bear. Bob, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Nice to be here.
Bob, you were telling me earlier that you didn't have much of a choice. You graduated from high school, and all of a sudden you were off to war.
Yeah, graduated end of May 1942, went into the Army Air Force first part of November of 1942.
Back in 1942, a lot of the guys, I suppose, were going into the service, but were there a lot of guys that wanted to be in the Army Air Force as opposed to the ground pounders?
All kinds of them. Yeah. You know, a lot of guys wanted to fly, and that's the only way they could ever afford to do it, was to go into the military.
So when you raised your hand and said, I'm in, Did you know you were going to be in the Army Air Force?
Well, I knew I was going to be in the Army Air Force. I don't know where. I didn't know where I'd end up because you got to jump through some hoops.
So you had to pass some tests in order to get in.
Mental tests and then a physical.
And you passed them and off you went. Well, where did they send you first?
Well, I went to Jefferson Barracks, Missouri to take Army basic training. And then over to Washington University for college training detachment for 4 or 5 months to brush up on your physics and math.
Now, were they speeding up all of that training?
If you dropped your pencil, you missed 6 weeks.
I hope you didn't drop too many pencils, Bob.
Boy, they really put it to you.
So where'd you go after that, and how'd you get your flight training?
Then I went to San Antonio, Texas to be classified, and there they gave you some tests, and they ranked you 1 to 9. I was fortunate enough to get a 9 on all 3, pilot, bombardier, and navigator. Well, math was my favorite subject in high school, so I wanted to be a navigator. So I got my choice.
So did they send you off to flight training school then, or what'd they do?
Yeah, then they sent me to, Ellington Field at Houston, Texas for pre-flight, and then off to Hondo, Texas, which is about 40 miles west of San Antonio, for advanced navigation school. And that was about 4.5 months.
And somewhere in there, you got commissioned as a second lieutenant?
Right at the end of navigation school, when you got your silver wings as a navigator and commissioned as a second lieutenant, 19 years old.
So you went in 1942, right out of high school. How long did it take you before you were ready to fly an airplane and get into the battle?
Well, I went in November of 42. I met my crew in February of 44 at Sioux City, Iowa. That's the first time I'd ever seen a B-17.
And for those youngsters listening today, what was a B-17?
Well, the B-17 was a flying fortress. It was a 4-engine bomber. It was a huge airplane for that time. It wouldn't be huge by today's standards, but it's a huge airplane at that time. Carried 2,800 gallons of 100-octane gasoline, 6,000 pounds of bombs, a crew of 10, 6 enlisted men and 4 officers.
And how much protection did the plane give you?
Not very much. It was made out of aluminum. The aluminum was about as thickness as your suit coat.
That's not very good, Bob. We're speaking to Bob Clemens, a World War II flight navigator on a B-17, and Bob on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Bob, it was February 1944. You had your crew, and you met up with your first B-17, and you do a little more training, and then...
Yeah, we did our overseas training unit, and then they shipped us off. We thought we were going to get an airplane at Kearney, Nebraska, but they didn't have any, so we went to Newport News, Virginia by train and got on a ship and went by ship from Newport News, Virginia, to Oran, North Africa, and we were there a couple of days and then got on another ship to go to Naples, Italy.
Bob, this was quite a few years ago, and I'm not sure the young people today understand what a world war means. We were fighting in Europe. We were fighting the Japanese. The entire economy of the United States of America was devoted to this, wasn't it?
Yeah. 16 million people in the military service.
Imagine that, 16 million people.
Yeah, 16 million. And you got to realize the population of the United States was about 160 million. So 1 in 10.
1 in 10. And then most of the rest of them were involved in production of aircraft and tanks and munitions. And I think I read that we produced over 100,000 aircraft.
That's right. With the heavy bombers, 18,000 B-24s, 12,000 B-17s.
So how do we really explain to the listeners, what is a world war, the world at war, Bob?
Every place on the continent, on the whole globe was at war. The whole thing, in the way over in the Pacific, all over in Europe. And just as an example, I knew the continent of Europe at that time like I do the Twin Cities area. Now, I mean, I studied those maps so I would know where we were going.
You were the navigator. I hope you knew where you were going, Bob. Well, I can just imagine it was before my time. I'm a Vietnam veteran, but the world at war and the United States at war, 16 million men in the military, they were training people everywhere, weren't they?
Yeah, And these people at home were very important. That's when females, ladies started working because guys were all gone, so they had ladies in. And the ladies could do a lot of things because sometimes they had more dexterity in their fingers than men did. So they did a lot of things better than men could do it.
And we produced a lot of equipment, and we sent a lot of men off to war, didn't we?
We sure did.
Bob, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the 50 missions and where you went and what they were like. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We're talking to Bob Clemens, a World War II flight navigator. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Major General Rick Nash, Minnesota's Adjutant General, encouraging you to hire today's veterans. Today's veterans have a track record of integrity and have triumphed over adversity. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Hiring a service member just makes sense. Veterans have the training, work ethic, and proven skills that will immediately add value to your business. Help good business get better by hiring today's veteran. Visit PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking to Bob Clemens, a World War II flight navigator on a B-17. And Bob, we were just talking about you came right out of high school and you went into the service, trained up for a couple of years. Now you've got a crew of 10. You're an officer, a flight navigator. You're on your way overseas to get to Europe. And you ended up flying how many missions?
50.
50 missions.
Now, we got credit for two missions whenever we went north of the 47th parallel because of the Alps. Alps were tough to fly over, particularly coming home if you were shot up.
And when you first got over into the theater, where were you based out of?
We were 5 miles north of Foggia, Italy.
Italy. And where did your missions take you to generally?
Well, all over Germany, southern Germany, France, Austria, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Romania.
And of course, you were the navigator, so you had to learn the geography and where you were and how things were going.
Yeah.
How was navigation then compared to now?
Well, much more. Navigation then compared to today is just kind of old style. Most of what we did, we looked down at the ground. We called it dead reckoning.
Dead reckoning. I've heard of that. And then you had a spot in the plane where you could stand up and look up at the stars, too,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah. We were trained to do celestial navigation. If we'd have gone to the Pacific, you'd have done it because you'd flown at night there. Sure. In Europe, we flew in the daytime, and the British flew at night.
Can you tell us about a typical mission? I know that you've written about one to Budapest that sounds like a pretty scary mission to me.
Well, we went to Budapest, Hungary, to bomb a marshalling yards. That's where they put railroads supply together, where they're delivering stuff. Well, we went in at 23,000 feet, a cloud layer below us and one above us. Above us, the German bombers were dropping bombs on us. The group commander decided we'd circle the target and go in under the layer of clouds that was below us. So we circled for 20 minutes, and that doesn't sound like very long, but we were in constant flak ground fire. Those 80-millimeter artillery guns that they tipped up and shot at us with, 80 and 105-millimeter, but mostly 80-millimeter. And then we came back in at 13,000 feet and dropped the bombs. Well, over the target, we lost number 3 engine to the ground fire. We couldn't keep up with the group, so as we came off the target, 4 German fighters attacked us. And they shot out number 2 engine. And so we got 2 engines out, and fortunately the P-38s came and chased the 4 German fighters away, and we began to throw stuff out because we're down to about 10,000 feet then, and some of the Alps were at 11,700 feet. We had British maps that were made in the late 20s and early 30s that were very accurate. So the pilot said, plot a course so we get around these mountains and get back to Italy. Well, we did make it. When we got back to the Adriatic, we were down to about 7,500 feet because we kept losing altitude a little bit all the time.
Because you only had the 2 engines. That's why you threw out some of the gear.
Yeah. And that was a marvelous airplane. How it would bring you back on a couple of engines was amazing.
And you made it all the way back.
Yeah. 300 holes from flak that were about an inch and a half in diameter and 30 holes from 20 millimeter shells from the German fighters that were about 6 inches in diameter.
And you had 10 crew on the plane. They all made it back alive.
Yep. Two of them wounded slightly, but not very seriously.
Somebody was watching over you that day, Bob.
Boy, he sure was.
So what happened to that aircraft?
That aircraft in 2 weeks was ready to go again. They put two new engines on it, patched up those over 300 holes, and had it ready to go in 2 weeks. I talked to the crew chief about 30 years ago. He said he worked 56 hours on that plane without getting any rest. Those people on the ground were terrific.
I'm imagining a plane with about 300 Band-Aids on it, but it probably didn't look like that when they were done, did it?
Well, yeah, they put these pieces of aluminum with rivets. You know, that scored that the people on the ground and on ships were very important, too, not just us guys in the air. The whole armed forces was cooperative, and they all did a great job.
Once again, logistics and support. You can't operate without food and water, ammunition, parts, repairmen, all of those things. It's really, the support crew is really important, isn't it?
I think the ratio of those 16 million men, I think, was about a million in combat and 15 million backing us up.
I believe it. We're speaking to Bob Clemens, a World War II flight navigator on a B-17 on Minnesota Military Radio. Bob, I know you've written about another mission to Romania that was a little hot, too.
Palesti, Romania, where the Germans got maybe 50% of their oil. The oil refineries there were built by Shell, the Dutch company, and Standard Oil of America, built in the late 20s and early 30s, and Hitler took those over. And we needed to knock that out. The 15th Air Force made out of Italy and North Africa made 19 missions to Palesti. I was on five of them. And one of them, the five, was a really tough one for us. They all were tough overall, but this one was particularly tough for us.
I heard that was another one where you lost two engines again.
Yep. Yeah.
And how did you make it home?
Well, we took the lead and our group followed us. While we were over the target, a flak shell exploded. It broke the wind. It shattered the windshield, didn't break it, in front of the pilot, and it shattered that Astrodome where I took the shots on the stars if we were flying at night. And a piece came through that Astrodome and hit my helmet and made a dent in it about as big as my fist, knocked me down, but didn't break through the helmet. And I wish I'd have kept the helmet.
And you went on to be a financial advisor, so apparently it didn't hurt your head any either. Bob, we talked a little bit about this was a world war. There wasn't any hesitation back then. You had a job to do, and you went and did it.
Yes.
What would you say to our young people today about World War II and the 16 million military and going after the Germans? And, of course, we were after the Japanese. What would you tell them today about that war and the lessons you've learned?
Well, the lessons I learned was that this country of ours is a great country, and it's been great for me. I grew up in the Depression, and we were very poor, and business has been kind to me. I'm not a rich man, but I got enough to live and enough for my bride when I'm gone, and this just is a great country, and we just had to defeat those people that had ideas of world domination in their mind, the Japanese and the Germans.
Bob, you were part of what we've called the greatest generation and did a magnificent job in World War II, but since then we've gone to Korea and Vietnam and the Gulf Wars and Iraq and Afghanistan. The United States military is something, isn't it?
Oh, they're terrific. The best people in the country. In the military, just smart, wonderful people.
Bob, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I just appreciate having this opportunity to be interviewed, and I thank you very much. It's a lot of fun to talk to you because these memories now for me are pleasant. They weren't very pleasant when I was doing it, but they're pleasant for me now.
Bob, I'm glad you had a chance to come visit us today, and thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
That was Bob Clemens, a World War II flight navigator on a B-17 on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mark Brown, Bob Clemens, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we speak to the ESGR, that's Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, about their upcoming annual banquet, and learn about the Eagle's Healing Nest program, helping our veterans with the invisible wounds of war. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.